Hey, thanks so much for listening to this message. My name is Jason, and I'm one of the ministers here at the Madison Church of Christ. It's our hope and prayer that the teaching you hear today will bless your life and draw you closer to God. If you're ever in the Madison area, we'd love for you to stop by and study the Bible with us on Sundays at 5 p.m. or Wednesdays at 7 p.m. If you have questions about the Bible or want to know more about the Madison Church, you can find us online at madisonchurch.org. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast, as well as our sermons podcast, Madison Church of Christ Sermons. Thanks again for stopping by. I hope this study is a blessing to you.
All right, so I think we got three weeks left in the quarter. I know Michael spent the last 2 weeks in the Old Testament with Ahab and Jezebel. We spent time with Elijah. And so I think what we're going to try to do the last this week and then the next 2 weeks is just probably spend some time talking about some mic drop moments related to Jesus. So tonight we're going to be looking at maybe something that you wouldn't consider a mic drop moment, but it's a mic drop moment of humility and selflessness and service. We're going to talk about Jesus washing the disciples' feet and kind of how that shaped like as it relates to his leadership and kind of paints the picture of his ministry and what it really meant. So that's our goal for tonight. And then, like I said, we'll probably be spending the next couple weeks looking at some other events related to Jesus as well as we close out the quarter. Before we get into anything related to the text, we're going to be talking about washing of the disciples' feet. That event takes place right at the Lord's Supper, or the Last Supper. And so part of that, and I thought this would be an interesting way to start, is just for us to talk about this, is, you know, that supper was probably eaten like in a reclining nature. And so I wanted to talk about the, like, reclining to eat versus sitting, and kind of like, I don't know if you've ever thought about it, but like, when did that transition take place to where people quit eating, lying down, and started to sit? And so this does, you know, it does connect, and it pertains to what we're going to be talking about. Even in the text tonight, you'll see that it talks about Jesus and his disciples reclining at the table. So I thought this would be beneficial for us to take a look at. Some of these pictures look better at home than they do on the screen, so I apologize. Some of them get grainy when I get here. So, all right, so this practice of reclining to eat really was focused around the Mediterranean world. So we're talking Israel, Egypt, Greece, Rome. That's really where you see this taking place. And so people commonly reclined while eating rather than sitting. And so people would lay on these couches. I think in Latin it's called triclinia. I could be saying that wrong, and if so, I apologize. But it was arranged in a U shape around a table. So you'd have the couches or the cushions in a U shape, and then you'd have a table kind of lower to the ground so that you could lay comfortably and you could eat. They leaned on their left arms, so you can see these guys leaning on their left arms, and then you would use your right hand to eat. These meals were very long. They were relaxed, obviously. The setting was comfortable. It was a social deal. So it was more than just the meal. It was an experience. And so it was also a symbol of freedom. We're going to talk about that here in a second. Like, what, you might think, well, why was reclining a symbol of freedom? We'll talk about that here in a moment. I was thinking, like, my five-year-old would love this if we still ate like this. She prefers to have her meals on the couch as well, even today. So she would have no issues with this whatsoever. I thought about her immediately when I started looking into this. So by the time that the first century rolls around and you've got Jesus and the disciples, like, the Jewish people are doing this as well because, you know, Jerusalem and Israel was ruled by the Romans. Obviously, there was Roman influence there, cultural influence. And so the Last Supper likely took place while reclining. And we can see that in John 13 that we're going to be looking at tonight. And then even reclining at the Passover became a symbol of freedom, reminding the Jews that, you know, they were no longer slaves in Egypt. They were once slaves, but now they're free. And so, why was reclining common? It was a cultural thing. It was something that had spread throughout the Mediterranean world, throughout Rome. Only free citizens were allowed to recline at the table. If you were a slave or a servant, you either had to sit or you had to stand. So only free people were allowed to recline. So kind of going back to the Passover meal and those Jews being able to recline, that's why it kind of meant something special, because they were considered free. They were no longer slaves. Like I said, the furniture design, everything was kind of low to the ground. And so this was very popular up until about the 2nd to 4th centuries AD. And then you start to see a transition. This is basically after the fall of Rome. You begin to see sort of a new trend take place. You've got the spread of Christianity. You've got cultural and practical changes taking place. And it begins to reshape the dining habits of the known world. And so early Christians began emphasizing equality and simplicity as it related to meals. So example, like the Lord's Supper. And so sitting together at a table symbolized fellowship, rather than it being, you know, laying on your side, eating like a Roman noble. It was more about like the common man. It was like, we're all equal. And so we're gonna sit together. It doesn't matter, you know, where you're from. And so the furniture begins to evolve because of this. So around the 3rd to 4th centuries AD, you start to see dining chairs appear. And this was more commonly prevalent in like Rome, the Roman and the Byzantine homes at the time. But tables started to become higher, which made reclining less practical. And, you know, if you've ever laid on the floor and tried to reach up onto a table, it's very uncomfortable if you're trying to grab something. And so, again, another cultural shift takes place during the medieval period. So, like, we're talking 5th to 8th centuries AD. You've got people sitting on benches, kind of like this picture down here below. Maybe stools around a table. This was like the norm in Europe at the time. And so communal dining that was taking place at these monasteries and these castles reinforced the use of this furniture. Meals were for function, right? It was for nutrition. It was for community, like sit around a table, spend time together. Everybody's the same height. You're not laying down, but you're sitting. It was not about luxury or display, like what the Romans were doing, where it was like this big, elaborate, you know, display. And then by the time of the Middle Ages, reclining was now seen as like an ancient or an aristocratic custom. So it wasn't very popular anymore. Sitting upright had become the normal and polite way to consume a meal. And this was very prevalent across Europe. And then, of course, as colonies spread and people started moving to different continents, and then we had the creation of the 13 colonies, you know, the United States. So these traditions followed with these people as well. So you probably didn't know you were going to get a Food Network lesson in dining, but there you go. It does relate to our text, I promise. All right, so with that, let's take a look at, we're going to be in John chapter 13, and we're going to look at verses 1 through 17. Could I have a volunteer read that, if you don't mind, when you get there, please?
Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, when the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper. He laid aside his outer garments, and taking a towel, tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, do you wash my feet?" Jesus answered him, "What I'm doing you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand." Peter said to him, "You shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered him, "If I do not wash you, you have no share with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." Jesus said to him, "The one who has bathed does not need to wash except for his feet, but is completely clean. And you are clean, but not every one of you." For he knew who was to betray him, and that was why he said, "Not all of you are clean." When he had washed their feet and put on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, "Do you understand what I have done to you? Truly, truly, I say to you, A servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed you are if you do them.
Thank you. All right, so what I'd like for us to do now is I want to take a look at, I want to talk about just the act of washing feet, kind of the, everything in this class, we've tried to take a look at the historical perspective and the cultural, and so I want to do that because I think it helps add context to why Jesus decides to do this. So we're gonna take a look now that we've read through the text and we have an idea of what's going on in this specific event. We're gonna take a look at just the washing of feet in the ancient world, and then we want to talk about like what made Jesus different from the other rabbis and the Pharisees of the day. Because we're going to talk about the fact that, yeah, Jesus was considered a rabbi. He was a teacher. And what made him different than those other guys? And, I mean, clearly this event that takes place where he washes the feet of his disciples is, I think, a very pivotal event that separates him from others of that day. And so we're gonna look at that. We want to look at what it meant for Jesus to perform the act, like on a social and spiritual level. And then we want to spend some time talking about just the act of serving. And then we also want to explore like the concept of being served as well. Peter provides a great example of this in this text of like being willing to being served. And so we want to talk about the importance because those are actually both very important. And this event teaches us that. So first, let's take just a quick look. Hopefully you're not grossed out by feet, but we want to talk about just feet washing, okay? It's really interesting. And I think, what we're going to talk about, part of it goes back to hospitality in the ancient world. And, there's no better place to talk about hospitality, right, than in the South. We all understand that concept of what it means to be hospitable and to offer that hospitality. And so I think we probably have a good understanding of why this would be important. But in that area of the world, right, it's very, certain parts obviously are very arid. It's desert. It's grimy. It's very easy to get dirty if you're outside. And so foot washing was a common practice back then, just like washing our hands is today. And part of the issue is that people wore sandals. For the most part, if you had shoes. And so wearing sandals in a desert, arid environment, your feet are going to get dirty. Somehow my children's feet get dirty inside shoes. I don't know how that happens. But if you've ever had to try to wash a child's foot, you understand. Mm-hmm. So as a result, washing feet became, it was a necessary thing. It was a frequent thing that took place just to maintain cleanliness and comfort. Like there is a level of comfort that comes with like after you've cleaned yourself up, like if you've worked outside all day, there's a level of comfort that comes from that. And so obviously that was part of the intent with this feet washing. So it was a practical aspect of daily life for the Jews. It was, like I said, it was for hygiene, personal hygiene, comfort, and but also it related to other aspects of their life as well. So also, foot washing was an essential aspect of hospitality in Jewish culture. So if you were to go to someone's house, the host would provide you a basin, kind of like what you see on the screen, with water, and then the guests would be able to wash their feet as they entered the home. Now, it was a sign of hospitality, but it was also a symbol of rank because there was usually a designated individual that had to perform the cleaning of the feet. And so that person was usually like the lowest person on the totem pole. It might be a servant, it might be a slave, but it was the lowest person did the dirtiest work. And so, again, that ties back into why Jesus did what he did with washing the feet. We're going to get there. And so this act was a gesture of welcome and respect for like the person that was having you over to offer that. This dates back all the way into the Old Testament. Like if you remember from Genesis 18:4, Abraham offers to wash the feet of the divine visitors, the three visitors that come to him. And then in 19:2, also Lot offers the same courtesy to those visiting him in Sodom. So this is a practice that dates back, you know, into that time frame in the Old Testament. It also held religious significance in Jewish tradition as well, because the priests in the tabernacle and later in the temple were required to not only wash their feet but also their hands when they were performing their duties. And so this is described in Exodus 30, verses 19 through 21. So in summary, the frequent washing of feet among the Jews was like multifaceted. It served many purposes, right? It was, it encompassed hospitality. It was part of their religious observance. It was part of their daily hygiene to stay clean. And so it reminds me of today, like, I don't know if you've ever, like, if you go to someone's house and you've taken your shoes off, like sometimes when you go in, one of my aunts was big on, like, take your shoes off before you come in. I had a friend in my neighborhood. We could not even look at his carpet with our shoes on. Like, it's the most pristine carpet I've ever seen in my life. I don't know how it stayed that clean. So we have things like this that even we practice today that are kind of similar. What we're going to see, though, in the New Testament is that with Jesus and this event where he washes the disciples' feet, this begins to take on a profound symbolic meaning in the teaching of Jesus, because what we see in John 13 is that he washes the feet of his disciples, demonstrating that, kind of adding to this list, that there's humility, there's servanthood, like the Son of God, right? The highest of the high is now performing one of the lowest of the low jobs where he's washing their feet. And so we want to talk about that. It's a powerful lesson in humility. It's a powerful lesson in love, in encouraging believers to serve one another, which is ultimately what Jesus is trying to teach them through this event. All right, before we get to talking about like the serving and being served through that specific event, I want to talk just a moment about rabbis and Pharisees, and I want to kind of compare it back to Jesus, because what Jesus did by washing the feet of the disciples was very, it was out there, because you probably wouldn't see rabbis and Pharisees of the day being willing to do the same thing. And so I kind of wanted to break down just a little bit of the historical background behind like the Pharisees and the rabbis, and kind of like what they did and how they interacted with people. And it'll help paint a picture of how Jesus was different. That's my goal here. So you're going to get a lot of information. Hopefully you'll find this useful. So during the first century, during the time of Jesus, Jewish society was deeply religious, right? We know this just from history, from biblical text, from Josephus, from all of these different scholars. The Jewish people living under Roman, you know, they were living under Roman rule, but their faith was there. They had traditions that were very central to their identity. It was very essential to their life, and it kind of helped separate them from the Romans. And so during the first century, Pharisees and rabbis were like among the most influential religious leaders of the time. You could probably throw scribes under there, down towards there somewhere. So let's talk about who were the Pharisees. And so that's mainly who I have up here on the screen. I couldn't really find a good photo of a rabbi. So I found much better photos of the Pharisees. The Pharisees were a group within the Jewish religion who focused on obeying the law very carefully, not just the written law, right, the scriptures, the Torah, but also the oral law. The Jews had many additional traditions and interpretations that were passed down through generations orally. So the Pharisees tried to keep all of this. They were very devout in that. They believed that following God's commandments in every detail, from what you ate to how you washed your hands, made a person righteous. So they were very like work centered, like that's what drove their faith. And so they studied scripture constantly. They debated how to apply God's laws in every situation to daily life. Their goal was to keep Israel pure, specifically during a time of like severe paganism, because you know, if you've studied anything about the Romans, you know just how crazy their culture was and how many gods and goddesses they had and the festivals that they threw. And so this was a very difficult job that the Pharisees had to try to keep the Jews pure and faithful to God in this world that was influenced very heavily by like pagan culture. So the danger is that they often became, I'm talking about the Pharisees, they became so focused on the outward rules, right, the traditions, that they lost sight of the heart that was behind the law, right? The love, the mercy, the humility, they lost sight of that in their efforts to keep the traditions going. And I think we can see that, and I think that's one of the areas, one of the reasons why they butted heads so severely with Jesus is because of that. Now, the Pharisees were a religious sect, so they weren't the only religious sect of that day. And so I don't know how much you've ever looked into this, but there were other ones as well, right? You had the Sadducees. Do you guys remember what made them kind of separate from the Pharisees and from the other groups? There was like really one common belief that the Sadducees held that kind of separated them from the others.
They didn't believe in the resurrection.
Yeah, so they didn't believe in the resurrection. And the more I read about the Sadducees, they rejected the oral traditions upheld by the Pharisees. So there's another thing that kind of helped separate those groups. There was another group called the Essenes who kind of lived like monks. They kind of lived out in the desert. They believed that they were responsible for the creation of the Dead Sea Scrolls that were found out. They lived out in that area where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. So those guys were kind of... they didn't like the things that were going on at the temple, so they kind of secluded themselves out in the desert. And then you had the Zealots, and the Zealots were the ones that were like trying to start fights every day with the Romans. And they thought the only way to get Rome out is to fight them physically through combat. So just to kind of give you a little bit more of a broad understanding of the different groups, but the Pharisees obviously were probably the most popular. They're the ones that we talk about the most. Now let's talk about the rabbis, just briefly. Oh, one other thing. I can't remember. Well, I'll get to this in a second. I'm gonna talk about the rabbis first. Sorry, I'm like a kid at Christmas. There's so much that I enjoy talking about. I get ahead of myself sometimes, so I apologize. All right. So the word rabbi means teacher, my teacher or my master, and so rabbis were respected teachers of the law. Much like professors are today, or like spiritual mentors, many Pharisees were also rabbis. This is not a tongue twister. Many Pharisees were also rabbis, though not all rabbis were Pharisees, if that makes sense. So I think like rabbis was more of like a position you held. It was more like a job. Pharisee was like a religious organization that you could belong to. Like if you believed in the things that the Pharisees believed in, then you could join that group. And so not all rabbis were Pharisees. Their job was to teach scripture in the synagogues. They guided communities in like moral understanding and religious matters. They interpreted the Torah, the law, how it applied to everyday situations. Rabbis were often followed by groups of disciples, students, who learned by listening and observing and trying to imitate their teacher's life. So that kind of ties back into Jesus, because Jesus had disciples who, you know, they did that exact same thing. And so the Pharisees and the rabbis were both very public figures. They were out, they were seen, they were very visible. They liked to be recognized for their devotion and authority. So kind of talking about the rabbis, they even taught in marketplaces. Like I said, they would teach in the synagogues as well. They would teach on the streets where people were gathered. And so they believed that their visible devotion, like being seen, teaching, would inspire others to follow the law. The problem with the Pharisees specifically is that they began to love the attention they were getting because of their religious lifestyle. They wore special, this is where we're going to talk about the pictures. They wore special clothing with long tassels. They had the phylactery boxes that they wore to show off their holiness. And this is mentioned in Matthew 23, verse 5. They prayed loudly in public places so that they could be heard. And so that's where I have these pictures. These are parts of the phylactery boxes that were worn by the Jews. And then here's a diagram over here as well that kind of shows how it was put on. And then talking about like the tassels and the robes and the specific things that they wore that kind of separate them out. You can see that they definitely looked different than, you know, your normal Jew of the day. You could clearly tell that who was a Pharisee and who wasn't. So everything for them was about social status. It was about being seen as righteous. It was about being receiving that respect and that honor and that influence from the public, like being seen. And so this is, you know, talking about in a society where religion shaped everything, being recognized as a holy man, like these Pharisees were, this brought privilege, it brought admiration from the public, and so you know, they really liked that. And so that's why Jesus often criticized and rebuked them, because of their hypocrisy. He said, "You appear holy on the outside, but you're prideful on the inside." In Matthew 23, he said they were like whitewashed tombs. He said that you're beautiful on the outside, but you're full of decay within. And so we know that Jesus, through his ministry and through his teachings, taught that true righteousness comes from humility and from love, not from public display. And basically, you know, that's why he and the Pharisees butted heads, is because the Pharisees, their heart wasn't in the right place, right? They were so concerned about following all of these extra traditions and all of these works, but it was they had a heart issue, and that was where they had gone wrong. And we can clearly see that through Scripture. Now, I wanted to talk just a moment about Jesus being called a rabbi, because as you read through the Scriptures, you'll see that Jesus was actually referred to as a rabbi several times. He's frequently addressed as teacher. He's referred to in John 1:38, Jesus turned and saw them following. "What are you looking for?" he asked. And they said to him, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where are you staying?" And then in Mark 9:5, Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here." In John 20:16, Jesus said to her, "Mary," and she turned and said to him in Hebrew, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Hopefully I said that right. These references show that his disciples and the others who encountered him on a daily basis, they used that title of rabbi to address him. And so what we want to talk about is what made Jesus different from these other guys of the day, right? That's really what we're trying to get to. And so I think there's two areas that really separate Jesus out from these other religious leaders of the day. And it's his focus and what he was teaching. So Jesus's teachings were more focused on the spiritual aspect of the law, emphasizing the importance of the heart and the spirit over the letter of the law. And that's one thing that separated him. And so this contrasted with the Pharisees, right? Because their emphasis was on following the letter of the law to a T, and the external observances that you were supposed to follow, all of these extra rituals. And so the other thing that separates Jesus is his ability to develop relationships with the people. I think this is something that the Pharisees really struggled with, is Jesus interacted with people very differently than these other religious leaders of the day. He was more approachable. He was more accessible. We can see this through all the different miracles that he did. He engaged with people. He engaged with crowds. And he addressed their needs and concerns very directly. It wasn't, you know, this contrasted with like with how the Pharisees, they like to kind of keep like a barrier, a separation. It was like, yeah, just have your people call my people and we'll set something up next week, basically. Whereas Jesus was very much on the front lines, out with the people, and really willing to take time to build relationships and to hear people and meet them where they were. And so I really think that's what helped separate Jesus from those other religious leaders of the day. Questions? Comments?
I think it's interesting how the closer they got to the word, like knowing it, wearing it, and all that, the farther they were from God.
Well, that's funny.
The closer they dove in it, because it's what would be a danger for us today.
Yeah.
Sometimes that legalism and how things become a rite of exclusion. I know in our Connect group, Craig Bell in our class was talking about, you know, we're discussing the rite of circumcision and the issues that caused with a lot of the Jewish and Gentile mm-hmm. Christians in the New Testament. Well, and one of the issues there with that, and I never really thought of it this way, but he had mentioned, you know, it was a rite of inclusion, but it had become a rite of exclusion. And that's a big, big, big switch. Say, if you do this, you're in. If you don't, you're out. But it's a big difference. You know, it's like trying to play to win a game or you play not to lose. That whole analogy. And I think that's what they're doing, you know, when you've got the idea. You're just trying to see who the other is. I just want to know who I'm supposed to hate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a real dangerous, real easy switch rather than saying, what am I doing to get closer to God? Or am I just trying to find a way to know who's not in my club?
Yeah.
But I think that's interesting.
Yeah, for sure. It's like kind of like going through the motions compared to like your heart really being in it.
Yeah.
Very true. Any others? Okay. I'd like to spend the rest of the time that we have talking about just serving and being served and kind of what we can learn from this text from John chapter 13. I'll give you a little bit of just context to tie into what we talked about with the verses that we read. So the scene takes place during the Last Supper, the night before Jesus was crucified, if you read some of the prior text. And so we know that Jesus, you know, quietly stands up, he gets a towel, wraps around his waist, and he begins to wash their feet. And so again, it's important that we understand like the context behind what he's doing, right? And I think with us talking about the ritual of washing feet, like the cultural background that it was reserved for the lowest of the low to perform that task, it kind of helps us understand why Jesus, what he was trying to show them, where he was, you know, he was willing to take that lowly position to carry out this menial task. And I think we also understand now like what kind of, how that kind of separated him from other religious leaders of the day. We understand that the people that would normally assume that role would be like a servant or a slave, but here you have the Son of God, right, a king, being willing to do this. And so I think it's important to remember the world that the disciples have grown up in. And I think it's like this in our world even today. It's a world that's very focused on accumulation, on power, on like being important. And so for Jesus to do what he did, he was really kind of taking them back. Like that's really not what it's all about. It's not about power and importance and being seen, but it's about service and humility and serving. And so that's what he's really trying to get across to them. And so it makes sense that the disciples would have like been caught off guard by this, because to them, like whoever is the greatest is the one that's the top dog. It's the number one. And so this helps us understand, I think, why Peter was so quick to question this action that was taken by Jesus. Like he's like, he very, very right off the bat, he says, and it says, when he came to Peter, Peter resisted. He said, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" And Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand." Peter didn't get it at first. And so after washing all of their feet, Jesus said, "Do you understand what I've done for you? Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet." And so Jesus' act wasn't just about like clean feet. It was about clean hearts. He was teaching his disciples and us that the true mark of leadership is service. Humility is greater than like any kind of status that you can have, and he's trying to teach that by performing this act for them. Love is expressed. You know, you've heard it, actions speak louder than words. You know, he's trying to express that through this event where he washes their feet. So in a world where people want power and position, Jesus is showing that true greatness is found by lowering yourself and serving others. No act of service is too small. And this is something that I try to talk to my older girls now. It's like, it could be as simple as like holding the door for somebody. Like just, I think it's about looking outward and trying to find like ways that you can like serve And it could be as simple as like taking a cart to the stall at the grocery store, or holding the door. I try to tell them that all the time. It doesn't have to be some big elaborate, you know, event that you do. It can be something very small. This made me think back to when I was in high school. My grandmother lived very close to the school, and I could walk there some days. And part of my responsibilities when I would go there is I would help take care of her dogs. And she had a Chihuahua named Barney. This is like, these are the craziest dogs. She had a Chihuahua named Barney that was, if he got too nervous, he would barf all over you. And then she had a weenie dog named Gretchen that, she looked like she was 300 pounds. I don't think she really was. I just know that she could not go up steps because her stomach would rub on the steps. So part of my job, I'd go over and I would walk these dogs and like kind of help take care of them a little bit. My grandmother was born without hip sockets, so she had trouble walking. So she kind of waddled like a duck almost. So it was difficult for her to take care of the animals and walk them. My grandfather had passed away, so I would go and I would help take care of the dogs, and because obviously she couldn't, it was difficult for her to walk, but like it was just little things like that, you know. I think back on probably how big of an impact that made for her. Obviously, at the time, I probably wasn't thinking how important it was. I will say that the weenie dog Gretchen, even though she weighed like 300 pounds, when I was much younger, I was over there one afternoon eating a Jack's cheeseburger, and I just remember Gretchen going airborne. It was like kind of like one of those events where it's like slow motion. I'm holding the cheeseburger, and then here comes Gretchen, and then there goes my cheeseburger. So she was quite big, but she had some good jump. So there's no act of service that's too small. There's no task that should be beneath us when it's done in genuine love, right, for somebody. And so really serving others means putting their needs before your own. It's looking outward, and our culture likes to look inward, I think. I think it was the same back in the first century as well. And I think Jesus said it best in Matthew 20, verse 28, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. So that's a great verse that kind of coincides with talking about service. Then the other side of the story is the willingness to be served. I think this one's kind of difficult for us. Peter's first reaction was to say, no, Lord, because it felt wrong for the Son of God to kneel before him and wash his feet. And I get it. I think we can totally relate to Peter in this event. It's difficult. Like, we like to be the ones doing the serving. We don't always like necessarily to be the ones being served. I know after I had my brain surgery, it was really weird for me to like get used to like people doing stuff for me. Just because I wasn't very mobile. So it was like, I was like, I need help walking. I need help washing my hair. I couldn't reach my hands to my head. I remember the first meal I ate at home, I was like having to hold the plate up like this. I was like, yeah, I'll come sit at the table with you guys. And it was like, wait, I can't look down. I can't even move my neck. So it's like a lot of things that I took for granted. But you know, I had, my wife took care of me, my family, our church family was amazing. Hold on, I've got this noted in here. I didn't want to leave anybody out. Oh, my neighbors who came and escorted a bird that flew in our house one night because I couldn't get out of the chair. So they had to come rescue a bird and get it out of our house. But yeah, so I had to learn how to be served. And it was weird because, again, I like to be the one like doing stuff and serving. So like Peter, I had to learn to like take it. And because something that I can't remember who told me this, but they're like, look, if you don't allow yourself to be served, you're taking that opportunity for service away from somebody else. So I was like, okay, yeah, I get that. That's a good point. And so like I said, I had to learn to be served because it's giving others the opportunity to do that. And so I think, you know, to talk about the true mic drop moment. Is this, just to kind of get back to the text, After finishing, Jesus stands up, he puts his robe back on, and he returns to his place at the table, and then he delivers the ultimate line, right? This is where the mic drop moment of the entire scene comes in. He says, "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you should also wash one another's feet." And that's John 13, 13 through 14. So basically he's saying, if I, the highest one, right, the Son of God, can stoop that low to wash your feet, then none of you are too important to serve as well. So you can do the same thing. And so in one move, Jesus redefines leadership as servanthood. It's not about just being top dog, telling people what to do, but it's about serving. He redefines greatness as humility, right? Being willing to serve, and then redefines authority as love in action. I always tell my girls, I'm like, look, if your 40-year-old dad who had brain surgery can pick stuff off the floor, and you saw me do it, you can do it too. So I'll leave you with that. Thank you so much for your time and for your attention. I hope everybody has a great week. Oh, any questions or comments? All right, thank you all.